Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate, a podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Cambucos.
Welcome to the KP Podcast, everybody. I'm Pete Cambucos, sitting here with Keith Anderson, and we're coming back from the forum to give you guys here a little market update on what is happening here with our real estate market in the Phoenix area.
We just got back from the summit
Shareholder summit.
The shareholder summit for EXP. It was an awesome conference. A lot of stuff to learn. Really cool to see the dynamic of that company compared to a lot of the other companies and what's going on and the future of the real estate. And it's crazy because we're coming back to talk about a market update here in Arizona as well as the country. And you hear the same conversations. That's a national conference. That's a worldwide conference.
Yeah, international. Yeah.
And we hear the same conversations across all agents, mm-hmm. across all platforms about what the heck is going on. Rates affecting not just this market, but every market. So we're coming back today to talk about where are we at? What's been happening? What's changed? And how are we looking? Because I know a couple months back, Pete, we talked about, hey, easy, hold your horses, mm-hmm. don't freak out yet. We need sustained multiple months of something before we have to worry. Well, now we're what? A month and a half since that conversation?
Yeah,
two and a half months. We've seen rates do what they're doing. So let's talk about it today, Pete. Let's start with what? We're shifting, right?
We've shifted.
Yeah. Past tense.
And it's moved quickly, right? But that goes to the point like you're making is now everybody's got a story and everybody's got a narrative. And there are very smart people out there who have been doing this for a very long time who all have their stories, right? So how is it? What are we supposed to do with the fact that I've got really smart people who have been through this stuff before telling me on the one hand it's going to crash. Yeah. I got the same or similar people on the other side telling me it's not going to crash. I got the other ones telling me rents are coming down. I got the other ones telling me rents are skyrocketing. Yet they've all been through this stuff. They're all smart. So what are we supposed to make of all that?
It's opinions, right? It's speculation.
Stories.
Like anything, right? In order to judge something is a prediction. You know, if you flip a coin, it's either heads or tails. There's going to be people on both sides of this thing.
Yep.
Now, factors point to one thing or another, momentum, trends. Those are all things that we look at to determine how we want to speculate on the market.
And
that's where we're at.
And ultimately, what we want to look at today and go through with you guys here is the facts.
Yes. Okay?
So the facts and the data, this is what we can actually go over. Hey, what is actually happening? What has happened and what are we seeing? And more importantly, what we'll end is, what are we looking at?
Yep.
You know, how are we going to tell where we're going in the next, you know, 3, 6, 12 months?
And we have two major directions that this thing could probably head. And we can look at both of those scenarios and really decide what facts do we need to see in order for each of those to occur,
right,
if you will.
Yep.
So let's start with the facts right now.
So,
Pete, how's inventory doing for us?
So inventory has increased tremendously. So when we looked at these numbers at the end of February, beginning of March, somewhere right around there, we hit, remember, an all-time low. And I will say that prediction of mine did come true. Remember, we did our prediction show, and I said we would hit the all-time low.
It was like
inventory.
An all-time tie. It was basically
all-time
right there.
Low.
I don't want to hear that.
So we hit an all-time low at the end of February, beginning of March, around about, you know, because it'll vary day to day, about 4,500 or so active listings in the Phoenix metro area. 4 months later, it has basically tripled to just under 14,000 active listings,
give or take,
here in the Phoenix metro area.
It's given me vibes of what, 2018, 2019?
Well, yeah, we didn't move that quick in 2018. Yeah, but, you know,
I'm talking about inventory numbers wise. Like, we were sitting right in those mid-teens.
Oh, you're talking about the levels.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I think we got up to 18,000 or so there, 18,000, 19,000 at the end of 2018.
So we're still beneath that.
We're basically kind of where we were about 2 years ago. And I think just again, like we put the context on it, you know, normal inventory is about 25,000 to 30,000. So we're still very low. And like I said, about where we were 2 years ago, less than where we were 3 years ago. And so, moving quick, absolutely. But, you know, one couple of things we'll have to talk about is, well, where's that inventory coming from and what are the factors around it? So part of, you know, one factor that's kind of complicating this, if you will, is the fact that all of this is happening, meaning rates are going up, and inventory is going up, you know, demand is slowing greatly during a time when we have the normal seasonal slowdown. Yeah. So it's accentuating that. So, you know, if we had low rates, this is the time of year when we would see inventory come up normally. So even last year when we had incredibly low inventory, but because of that seasonality and that seasonal curve during the summer, as we are now, we saw the inventory start to rise even last year in an absolutely manic market. We saw that number rise. So now on top of that, you say, okay, normally the inventory rises this time of year, but now add on that demand basically plummeting and rates going up to, you know, affecting affordability. We're now, you know, with interest rates, again, depending on situations of where you are, but let's call it around 6% or so on mortgage rates. Well, that's affected, you know, affordability quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, you have those interest rates and you have those prices combined. It makes it a very tough environment for especially first time buyers, you know, and very tough for even investors in certain markets because they can't retain in rents what they're getting from some of these new properties, because investment rates are even higher than that.
Absolutely.
So now they're looking at other factors and trying to figure out what they want to do.
So and that's a great point, Keith, is who's affected the most.
Yep.
Everyone's affected, but first time buyers, they don't have a house to sell, so they don't have equity.
Nope.
If you've got a move up buyer, well, they've had the benefit of these house prices increasing over the last several years.
Yeah, so if you gain 30% equity in 1 year, maybe you can transition that sideways?
You could.
Be okay?
Yeah, at least you've got something to work with. It's not saying that a lot of those people still can't do it, but at least they have the equity there that they could move to a new property. A first-time buyer does not.
Correct.
So now they've got higher interest rates, and they can't come up with that down payment initially because they don't have the equity to pull from a current home. And the same with investors. If investors are adding, you know, to their portfolio, unless they're doing something like a 1031 where they're just moving from one property to another, if they're adding new properties, they're the same situation. They've got to come up with a down payment and they've got to make the numbers work at higher interest rates. So those two groups are being affected probably the most. Everyone is being affected, but those two groups more so than everyone else.
It brings up an interesting point that we talked about in the past, right? And it was certain individuals saying, hey, I'm going to wait for the market to crash. I'm going to wait for prices to go down, right? That was their common statement. Have you ever heard someone say, hey, I'm going to wait for interest rates to go down?
Nope.
No, because they were already historically low. So I think people took that out of the equation. The people that bought at that time, even though the prices were high, affordability, like we've talked about in the past, that was moderate. That was low, actually, at that point in time, because interest rates were near the bottom of they've ever been, the lowest possible. I mean, we've had conversations with lenders that were locking people even, you know, low twos, upper ones for crazy buy downs. And like, you'll never get a rate like that ever again. Like, it's very, very rare.
That.
We might not ever. And so now those people are looking at it like, well, we're still waiting for prices to go down. Well, the conversation is, let's say they do. Let's say they plummet. If your interest rate is still 8, 10, 12%, your mortgage payment might be the same. It might be higher than what it was, even with prices being what they were. So I think that's something to consider, is we really have to push on and press on affordability beyond just prices. It's not just the housing prices. It's also who can afford, how can they afford it? And, you know, are people actually pulling the trigger? It's affecting demand.
Yeah. And remember, interest rates change every day.
Every
so what
day.
We say, they're never going to stay where they are. We talked about it for the last several years when they were so low. Hey guys, not going to last like this forever. And the same thing when they go up. And that doesn't mean they won't go higher from here, but the point is they won't stay the same. And so, you know, that's where the old saying comes from of marry the house and date the rate, because the rate can change. The rate will change. Now, if you get in at 6%, let's say, and it goes up at 8%, well, good. You got it in at a lower rate. Now, if you get in at 6 and 2 years from now, it's down at 4, great. Refi to the lower rate. You know, at least if you can afford that payment, you're in the property that you want. But let's talk about some of these things, the scenarios that you talked about. You know,
so where are we going?
Yeah. Are we going to crash? Is there going to be a correction, or is there going to be a dip? And I think a lot of those terms get thrown around. But I don't know that anybody even knows what that means. Like, what does a crash mean?
Yeah. What does a crash mean, Pete?
How do I know if it crashes?
If my price goes down 3%, is that a crash?
I wouldn't say so.
I mean, that, so stock prices all the time go down that, and you wouldn't say that stock crashed.
Yeah, exactly. Stocks are a good
they go
way
up and
to
down
look
all
at
the time.
It. So they have definitions in the stock market of what's a correction, you know, what's a crash. And so, you know, in the stock market, a correction is, you know, something that's up to 10% down. we call it a correction or a dip. You know, 20% would be a crash. If it's 20% or more, then we say, hey, it's a crash.
So we need housing prices effectively based on that rule. Again, claim that rule all you want because it might be the averages. It might go down 12%, come back up 5% the next week. Like, right. We're not really dealing with that. But you're saying that baseline average goes down north of 10%?
And so I would say in the housing market, you've got people that have tried to define it. You know, there's nothing official, if you will.
9% might still feel like a crash, exactly. You know, depending on how it is.
But when we're looking at it, we're saying, hey, is it over 10%? You know, then we might be in a crash territory if we're 10% or less, 10% price dip or less.
It's great.
You know, is it a correction, a dip?
Yeah.
You know, the other thing to consider, like we said, we're up 32% last year.
So define.
So if it goes down 10%.
Is that a crash? Because we're still 20% equity.
So the person who waited last year and said, I'm going to wait for the crash, the property they were going to buy went up 30%. So even if it goes down 10, it's still 20% higher than they were looking at.
Yep.
And as you pointed out, Keith, they also have a higher interest rate.
Twice, three times higher than they were.
Correct.
Like, that's tough.
It's a dangerous game to play. It is a dangerous game to play.
That's why we talk about it all the time. If it's your primary residence, you have to live somewhere.
Yep.
Use your money to work for you and find a way to do it. Like, it doesn't even, just don't let it sit in the bank. Like, that's my biggest thing. You're not making anything there. Do something with it.
You're guaranteed loss, right?
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. People worry about, well, you know, okay, what if it dips 5 or 10%? Well, guys, the U.S. government is officially telling you, don't have to believe me, look at what they're telling you. They're telling you that the inflation rate is 8.5% today. Could be higher. But that's what they're telling you today. So what they're saying is, if you put your money in the bank, we guarantee you it will be worth 8.5% less a year from now. You will be guaranteed an 8.5% loss on your money. They're telling you that. That's not my opinion.
Yeah. And I think even goes beyond that is people are always worried about what their home is valued at a certain point in time. But remember, that is not ever attained. Your appreciation or your asset is never truly attained until you actually sell that property. So, like, who cares if it goes down 10% through a market? Unless you're planning on moving within that first year, that's a whole different conversation and a whole different dynamic. But if you're going to plan on living in a house and staying somewhere, stop looking at the appreciation. Stop looking at what your house is worth every single day, because it doesn't matter until you sell it.
You've got to live somewhere.
Yeah.
I think part of the other thing for everybody to remember, as we were just talking about stocks, these are not stocks.
No, you're not trading them on a daily basis.
Not only that, but if I don't like a stock, I could just sell it. And you know what? I don't have to buy another one. But the difference with housing, as we point out, is you have to live somewhere. And so you have these stories out there. Well, prices are going to crash and rents are going to crash. And I go, well, how's that even possible? Where are these people living?
Yeah.
So if you're telling me on the one hand that they can't afford to buy, fine. But then they're pushed to renters.
Renting. Which is 100% interest rate and 100% loss in that sense.
With absolutely no safety, because you have no control over what that rent's going to be and you don't know where it's going. But we just had the national rental numbers come out today, this morning before we filmed this, and all-time highs.
Yep.
All-time highs.
Big
guys,
surprise. Because, I'm shocked.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, that narrative doesn't make any sense. These folks who claim that both rents and prices are going to decline, I don't see how that's possible, because then is everybody going to be homeless?
Yeah, it's supply and demand is going to have to shift. And if we truly do have a shortage in supply, period, like there's too many people trying to move into the state that we don't even have enough houses for and housing for. You can see all these apartment complexes and these things trying to build fast enough because there's nowhere for people to live. Mm-hmm. So as long as there's a shortage and this many people trying to move in here, in especially Arizona's market, like – They're going to be high. They're not going to just disappear.
Correct. And people will figure it out. They'll double up. They'll go with roommates. Some people might move back home.
Look at California. They did the same thing there. They bought with their family. They bought with friends. They moved in together.
That is an interesting point I heard from somebody the other day, which is people talk about how it's become so unaffordable. And they've pointed out, well, guys, LA, New York,
been doing it for years.
San Francisco, they've been unaffordable for decades.
Yeah.
But people still figure it out.
Yep.
And that's the sad part that nobody really loves to talk about. Is it really hurts the people, like we said, first-time home buyers, people trying to get in, people maybe who aren't making as much money? That's who gets hurt the most. It hurts the standard of living. People have to, if they can't afford it, they have to buy less of a house.
Or
they
move.
Have to go to an area that they maybe don't want to be in. They have to get that roommate. They suffer. They have to take less, and it sucks. But that's the reality of what happens. We can pretend that that's not what happens, but in reality, that's what happens. And so this isn't a good thing, but we can't control what it's going to be. All we can say is what's going
to
happen with
it. And at certain point though, it's good to get in there and get over that painful hump and start working towards something. Like I talk about my family all the time and certain friends and family that we have that made a purchase in a time with a growing market that was not necessarily the best situation. They couldn't afford all the best spots, but they did it. And they're going through those painful humps right now, right? But when they get over on that other side, they come away with long-term equity. Yeah. They have some stuff in place. Had they waited because it was going to be difficult or not what they wanted or the perfect scenario, they would be still waiting to go through that hump. And I think that's really key with primary residence, with affordability and all that stuff. So let's get back to that then. The crash correction. How are we looking?
What are we seeing right now?
Where are we
everybody
heading?
Always wants to look back to the last crash. And we remember what the situations were, or maybe we don't, but let's go over what the situation was then. We had plenty of supply.
Okay.
We had lots of speculation, lots of empty property sitting there, very loose lending.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that bubble. We don't have any of those things right now.
So we don't have upper inventory.
We don't have empty houses. We don't have empty houses.
We probably have some of the least amount of empty houses we've ever seen.
Absolutely. We did not have loose lending standards.
No.
They've actually been quite tight
Even
down the stretch. Even though we had low interest rates, it was not easy to get a loan. And so you have homeowners that are sitting there now with lots of equity and low mortgage rates locked in. These people are not selling.
They're not moving.
And they're not going to be forced to. And so one of the things that people forget when we talk about this affordability issue, I want to remind you guys, if you're priced out of buying, then you're priced out of selling. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? That means that if you're telling me that a buyer, because of these higher interest rates, can't afford the house that they want now, well, neither can the seller. So it's two points there. The buyer can't afford the house they're trying to sell to them.
Yep.
And the seller... Think about if you've got a $500,000 house and you've got $100,000 worth of equity. Well, just to move to an equivalent $500,000 house, even if you take that $100,000 equity and put it down, your payment's going to go up tremendously.
Yeah.
So why would a seller go, you know what? I'm going to move to a similar house, but it's going to cost me way more.
Going to have a pool this time.
And it's going to be way more expensive. Or I'm going to leave this house and move down to a lesser house.
And you're still probably paying more money. That's
correct.
Like a legitimate
for the same amount of money or more.
I think that's a key point, Pete. If you look at your own property you own right now, if you tried to purchase your own house on today's market and you can't afford it, then you probably shouldn't move.
Exactly.
Like you shouldn't. Like and it doesn't make any sense.
And there's a lot of sellers that are making that decision. So they're just going to stay put. And they don't have to move because you know what? Like we said, they're in a good position. They got a lot of equity and low mortgages locked in.
Yep.
Why would they move?
That makes sense.
That begs the question then, where's the inventory coming from? Hey, Keith, we said it's tripled, almost tripled in the last month. Yes, incredibly low. But I'm sitting here telling you, hey, these people are priced out of selling and buying. And then on the same hand, I'm going, but we've gone up from 4,500 to 14,000. So what's going on?
So my initial thought is, you know, without looking at numbers or going through it is, okay, are people getting pinched in a tougher market maybe in the economy where they need cash out and they have nowhere else to go except for pull that equity and sell their house?
God, I hope not. Well, that's going to be a bad spot for
correct, right? Like, but that's a conversation that like may happen where people are like, hey, I need the funds. I don't have my job. I don't have those things. So,
right. But we're not there now.
I don't think that's the inventory now.
Nope.
Could be investors trying to top out at the top of a market or speculation of, hey, we're at the top. Let me get out of my house. Regardless of their interest rates, you know, maybe they're willing to sacrifice their 4%, 4.5% because they want to take that cash out. They want to take that equity out of their home. They don't want to keep it long term. So there's one, right? And then, I mean, I don't know where. Can you think of where some of that other inventory is coming from?
Yeah,
what numbers did you pull?
I mean, that's basically where the inventory is coming from, guys. It's coming from investors, short-term rental owners, and second homes.
Yeah.
We're a big vacation market with the second homes and the short-term rentals. And you have investors who are either newer or trying to cash out. And so why are we seeing those? Because those are homes they don't have to have.
Yep.
Those people don't have to buy another one. They don't have to move somewhere. And so when the numbers don't work, some of these investors might be trying to get out. Short-term rentals, slowing down, some of those guys might be trying to get out. Second homes, we don't need it. If it's becoming too unaffordable for them, things are getting squeezed, they don't need it. And so the inventory that we're we're seeing is largely coming from that. And so let's look at what the actual percentages is, because we have data on this. So what we're looking at with our market is investors make up currently about 16% of what's coming onto the market. First-time home buyers are making up about 27% of the sales. So you've got two areas there, first-time home buyers getting priced out. So that's, they're declining tremendously. And the 16% of investors mm-hmm. that are putting on inventory could be putting on inventory. So that's what, 43% of the potential, you know, transactions that are out yep. there, which means the remaining 57% or more than half are people that would need to sell and then buy. So more than half of our transactions are basically getting priced out and can stay in their home right now. So the inventory increase we're seeing are coming from these two groups. The huge drawdown in demand on these first-time home buyers and investors, and then inventory coming on the market from investors, short-term rentals, and second homes. Now, that doesn't make up 100% of it, but that makes up the vast, vast majority. So then the question becomes, can it continue at this pace?
Well, demand is, if demand keeps diminishing like this and rates keep climbing. Now, we're hoping that some sort of volatility in that side of the market kind of stops and we can calmly find our place and settle in, because that would help a lot. But if it doesn't, this is the big, you know, flip of the coin. If our inventory continues to increase
yep.
and volatility does not stop for 6 months or more,
right,
we will see that big old scary C word. We will.
Yep.
The question is, do we think that's going to continue to happen? At some point, there's going to be a place where it can't. We can't keep increasing inventory if people aren't buying. Like, people are going to just kind of stop. It's just going to hit a brick wall
right.
of what that is. And we start to see it when those inventory numbers get up into the 20s and 25s. At that point, when you list your house and it doesn't sell and buyers become very limited and they get more options, maybe buyers feel more lax coming back to the market again, because they can have a little bit more competitive advantage. They don't have to write above list anymore. They're not tired. But that also means that prices are going to start reducing a little bit, and we're going to see that easing. So that's where we come to that conversation of a correction. Maybe prices do go down 5 to 10% over the next year.
Yeah, I would say
I
at this point.
I think they kind of have to in order to stop
correct.
This thing.
At this point, you know, I think a correction of some level is probably baked in there. You know, whether that's yeah. down 5%, you know, 10%, who knows, you know, over the next year or so, whatever it looks like. But to your point, Keith, those are the unknowns, Buzz. But we're telling you what you're looking at right now. There's three keys to look at. And it's what Keith was just talking about there with those first two. How high will the Fed go? At what point yep. do they stabilize rather than continuing to raise these rates?
Yeah.
So what we have to look at is how many more rate hikes are they going to do? The market's already pricing in several. We already know they're going to do the July one. Are they going to do the one in September? Are they going to do the one in November?
Are they going to announce additional?
Are they going to announce additional?
Yeah.
And so how long will they keep going? Okay. If they keep going and keep raising, then that becomes an issue. The second part of that equation with it is, for how long?
Mm.
For how long? Do they continue to raise rates all the way through the end of the year into next year?
Slowly, maybe?
Yeah.
Or do they do it all at once right. and get it done with right away
and
so we can correct
it?
Yeah.
So and then the final part of this, so we're saying, how high are they going to go? How long are they going to keep going before they stabilize it? And the last part of this is, will the seasonal curve roll over? And remember what I said is, this is happening during the time when we have our normal seasonal curve of rising inventory. That ends in about September, October. So
when the snowbirds start to come back, the weather gets better.
Everybody's back from
things,
the summer. Yep. And we're re-engaging in our market. So here's the keys for everybody to look at. The rates that we talked about, the length of time for those, and look at September, October. If we see this inventory continue to rise into October, past October into November, we're going to be heading towards a crash at
yeah.
that point.
I think the biggest thing is in that those couple months ahead. Well, guys, this is 90 days away, guys. I don't know if you guys know this. This is 3 months to know, are we crashing or are we not? It's yep. that close. The key is, do we get an increase of demand down that stretch? Does it help out a little bit? Do we get more buyers flooding in, helping bring down that supply a little?
And the first part
balance
of
balance us a little?
And the first part of that equation is going to determine that. So, yeah. you know, does the Fed stabilize rates. You know, are they saying, okay, we're done, and we don't need them to come down. We just need them to go. They're not going up anymore. The market will level out. Things will stabilize. People will know what's what. And so if that happens and we see the seasonal curve, you know, also stabilize and turnover, we'll be okay. We might have that dip correction, like we said, come down a little. But if these rates keep going and they keep pushing it out and that inventory keeps climbing, to watch out for that crash.
So awesome, guys. Appreciate you guys joining with us today. Keep your eye on the market. Keep your eye on this podcast. We're going to keep touching this over the next 90 days, but this next quarter is crucial. So follow us on all the social media platforms. We're excited to be here in the thick of it as we continue to dissect this market. So we'll see you guys next time.
See you guys.